In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday, the 12th of May. Good as always to have you along, everybody. You know how sometimes there is so much going on, you don't know where to start? This has been, repeat after me, one of those weeks. So what we're going to do is take it nice and slow, chronologically-like. Lynette Lopez writes for Business Insider. Catherine Rempel is a columnist at The Washington Post. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
Catherine, let me start with you. And I was going to add, my first question was going to be, how bogged down do you think the Trump economic agenda will be given the firing of James Comey on Tuesday night? But I guess I should ask you whether you think it's going to get bogged down at all.
It already has been bogged down.
Oh.
I mean, part of the key to getting tax cuts through was getting the Obamacare repeal through.
Mm-hmm.
And that turned out to be not as simple by any stretch of the imagination as either Trump or other Republicans seemed to think it would be. And so we're basically running out of time. I mean, we already are still stuck in this Obamacare repeal stuff. And then remember that the rest of the year, we still have to get through funding the next fiscal year, debt ceiling. There's mm-hmm. like a lot of other stuff that's crowding the agenda that will make it very difficult to get to tax cuts, assuming that that is what you mean when you say the Trump agenda.
Well, right. And there's that the other side, too, the trade side,
right.
Which is the Trump administration has still not been able to confirm Lighthizer, the trade negotiator.
No, he just got confirmed yesterday.
Oh, he just got confirmed yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday afternoon.
Well,
here we are, day 112, right? And we're still working on this. You know?
Yeah. Well, it seems like the senators, especially from border states, are starting to be emboldened to speak out against Trump's NAFTA agenda, which is what, you know, John McCain has started doing, pushing back against the president. And I think Comey has hurt President Trump's kind of strength when it comes to being a bully in the Senate and making people scared of him. People are starting to feel like they can counter him.
Okay, so let's go then, though, Catherine, to I guess it was I've lost count. Was it Wednesday or Thursday? Yesterday, I guess. The interview in The Economist in which the president once again seemed economically uncertain, shall we say, whether it's prime the pump, whether it's talking, as Lynette said, about trade, whether it's tax plan and deficits. There was not a complete command of the facts.
Not at all. I mean, almost to a ludicrous degree. Like, I think my favorite part of that interview was when he said something about how insurance is supposed to cost $15 a month for the rest of your life up until you get Medicare at age 70 or something like that. Anyway, there were just so many pieces of evidence of his confusion and lack of grasp of the facts and in apparent disregard for ever having to learn the facts.
Right.
That was particularly troubling, I think. You know, and he had his economic advisors in the room who did not exactly do much to try to correct him or nudge him onto
Gary
the right path.
Gary Cohn was the COO of Goldman Sachs. He's a titan of industry. And he sat there and he said nothing while Hope Hicks was answering questions. She's a 20-something girl.
Nothing. It gets worse, right? Set aside Hope Hicks for a minute. Set aside Gary Cohn. The Secretary of the Treasury, Steven Mnuchin, also a veteran of Goldman Sachs, deeply experienced, as I said yesterday, in the global economy. He goes along with the president when the president repeats falsehoods about China manipulating its currency. So the question is, what advice is he getting? You know?
Yes. Yes. I think Mnuchin actually said something like, as soon as Trump got elected or as soon as he got into office, I forget how he phrased it, that, you know, they stopped. They reversed themselves when, in fact, China has actually been propping up its currency since, I think, 2014, which, you know, for listeners out there who might not know, was before Trump was elected.
It was very supervillain henchman-like, you know, very like, you know, yes, master. It was very strange. And there's so much that happened this week that you just feel like it was a whirlwind. I will appreciate a weekend, but I don't know if we're going to get one.
Well, if, you know, there's only two more working days till Monday. So listen, we're going to get to today. We're going to get to that letter that came out this morning from the president's attorneys, stating that he had, with very few exceptions, no income generated from Russia for the past 10 years. Catherine, remind me what's interesting about the tax returns. It's not the income, it's the debt, and it's to whom you are obligated financially, right?
Well, it's both. I mean, there are reasons to think that he could be beholden to some Russian counterparty on both levels, right? I mean, like, he has actually gotten income from mm-hmm. Russian sources. So, for example, there's a home in Palm Beach
yep.
that he bought, I think, for $40 million
something,
or something. Yeah. And then turned around shortly thereafter and sold to a Russian titan for about twice as much. We don't know why, but maybe it was totally innocent. Maybe there's something shady that was being covered up. Maybe, you know, like lots of people have suggested terrible things.
If only we could see these mythical tax returns yeah. instead of receive a letter from his lawyers. I mean, I saw that headline and I was like, I just don't care. Until we see these tax returns, yeah. it doesn't matter what these people say anymore. Just show them. That's it.
We got to go. Lynette Lopez, a Business Insider, and Catherine Rempel at the Washington Post. Thanks, you two.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye. On Wall Street today, sideways mostly, kind of all week, actually. We'll have the details when we do the numbers.